But 1 Samuel chapter 30, we're going to read verse 1 through 6, and we'll get into the lesson. It says, "And it came to pass, when David and his men were come to Ziklag." Now remember, they were with the Philistine army, and the lords of the Philistines said, "You know what, we're not going to have these Hebrews here. They need to get out of here." And so the king sends them back to Ziklag. "On the third day, that the Amalekites had invaded the south and Ziklag, and smitten Ziklag, and burned it with fire, and had taken the women captives that were therein. They slew not any, either great or small, but carried them away and went on their way. So David and his men came to the city, and behold, it was burned with fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captives. Then David and the people that were with him lifted up their voices and wept, until they had no more power to weep. And David's two wives were taken captives, Ahinoam and the Jezreelitess, and Abigail, the wife of Nabal the Carmelite. And David was greatly distressed, for the people spake of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God." Now God promised David through the message Samuel gave to him that there was coming a day when David would be king over Israel. He would sit on the throne and he would rule and reign. Now, it was not going to happen quickly, and we see that Saul persecuted him and hounded him, and David's going through plenty of trials and troubles, and he hasn't sat on the throne of Israel just yet. But David would reign in the city that we would now know as Jerusalem. Now, if you travel from Bethlehem, Jerusalem, it's a distance of only a few miles, a very short distance. And you think about that. David could have went from Bethlehem to Jerusalem, but that didn't happen. God had a more circuitous route for David to take. Well, David went from Bethlehem and eventually would arrive in Jerusalem to become king. He would be the most famous of Israel's kings. But before he could go to Jerusalem and sit on the throne, God took him through very dark experiences, and one of those happens to be here at Ziklag. David seems to reach wit's end when he and his fellow followers went to Ziklag and saw what the Amalekites had done. Now, if you look geographically at a map and notice where Ziklag is located in relationship to Jerusalem, it's exactly in the opposite direction that you would travel if you were going from Bethlehem to Jerusalem. As a matter of fact, from what most people who study ancient geography of Israel, it's said by many, it's miles away in the wrong direction. But God had David go there because he had a particular preparation for David's life that would take place there before he became king. You know, God has something for all of us to do, and it is a work that he has already prepared for us. What he is doing at this very moment is preparing us to do it. This is not just for the preacher, it's for all of God's people. You know, prior to getting saved, I remember I was in the fire department, and then I went into inspections. I would do inspections around the different buildings, make sure everything is safe. But one of the things that entailed was I had to give demonstrations. I had to give fire extinguisher demonstrations to those on the flight line and those in buildings. Now, I didn't like public speaking. Anybody else like public speaking? No! And so I would have to get up in front of 50, 100 people sometimes, and I would have to give these demonstrations. Now, I never really cared for that. But you know what? I think God was preparing me a little bit for when the time he would call me to preach, and then I would stand before people and preach his word. And I'll be honest, I'm still fearful to do that today. I've been doing it for over three decades now, but I'm still fearful at times. And I think that's a good thing. You know, it's a extremely heavy responsibility to stand before people and rightly divide the word of truth and bring that forth to the people. Well, whatever God has for your life, God in his great wisdom prepares you to do it. Now, some people have the idea that God's will is way out yonder somewhere. Now, they're saying, you know what? One day, I'm going to do this for God. One of these days, I'm going to be a, and you can fill in the blanks, but that's not God's will. You see, God's will is living in a spirit of obedience to the Lord each day in your life. You know, some of us, we look way ahead and we plan what we're going to do for God. You know, I had a sibling one time. He says, you know, when I retire, I'm going to serve the Lord. Well, that sounds good, doesn't it? And you know, I'm glad he's doing something for the Lord today. But you know what? Why wasn't he serving him then? Why do you have to wait till you retire? You know, here's most people's plans when they retire. Well, they're going to get a truck, they're going to get an RV, they're going to pull it and then go across the country and look at the beauty of America. Now, I've read the Bible. I don't see believers are supposed to do that. Now, do you think there's anything wrong with that? No. As long as you're serving the Lord doing that, as long as you're doing God's will when you're doing that, that's a wonderful thing. But you know what? We're supposed to obey God day in and day out, and that's his will for all of us. When Abraham's servant found the bride for Isaac, he leaves Abraham, takes a bunch of camels, goes to Padan Aram, and when he prays, you know, all of a sudden Rachel shows up, and that's the bride for Isaac. And here's what he says. He says, I being in the way, the Lord led me. You see, he was doing what he was supposed to do, and the Lord led him. Now, we try to have all things figured out, don't we? We try to plan our lives, and we hope God's going to put his rubber stamp on it, and then we're going to live peaceably and happy all of our days and trouble-free. Who doesn't want that? I do. But is that reality? No. You know, the path we imagine that God has us to follow isn't anything like we plan. But if we just simply live day by day and keep our eyes on Jesus, we'll be fine. And God knows what he's doing. We simply need to trust him. When we come to the story in the Bible of David's experience at Ziklag, we see David with these 600 loyal men gathered around him. Now, these 600 men, they were David's fighting force. They were his soldiers. They were loyal to him. They followed David wherever he went. These guys, no doubt, were fearless. Men who thought they could conquer and defeat any foe. After all, they were facing Saul and his 3,000 men, and they were being chased by them. But you know what? They weren't fearful. They believed, you know what? If we have to battle these 3,000 chosen men of Israel, we'll be all right. From their exploits, they were able to care for themselves and take care of anything that was needed to provide for their families. But on this day, after they were told to leave the Philistine army, they crossed the hill, and they look where their families were encamped at Ziklag, and they saw nothing but a smoldering ruin. Their families, their wives, their sons, and their daughters, they were gone. They were taken captive. And to them, everything seemed to be lost. The Bible says these men were so troubled that they began to weep. They wept so hard that they could not even weep anymore. They were powerless to do so. Now, these were big, strong soldiers. They would be willing to fight the enemy, go hand to hand. in combat against the fiercest foes. And now, they're weak. They're weeping. They're helpless. No doubt, many have fallen on the ground, and they're crying until they were powerless to weep anymore. Then somebody began to whisper something. Then that whisper became a little bit louder. Finally, it became a rumble and a roar. Somebody was responsible for what had taken place here. Well, who's going to get the blame? David. He's the leader, is he not? Now, did David do that to that city? The Amalekites did. But who's getting the blame? David. He's the leader. They're thinking, you know what? He's got us into this mess. He's responsible for what happened to our families. And if it weren't for David, this would have never happened. And so what do we need to do? Well, let's kill the leader. That makes sense. He needs to die for what happens, for what has happened to us. He needs to pay. You know, that's one of the perils of leadership. If you dare say God has led me, and then you step forward to lead, there's always going to be consequences. Sometimes things don't turn out just exactly as you thought they would. But you know, if God is leading you, everything's going to turn out all right in the end. But there may be some bumps in the road, and most of the time there is. And so these guys are saying, you know what, David got us into this. Let's kill him. And they talked about stoning their leader. You know, at Ziklag, we need to encourage ourselves in the Lord. Every one of us is going to face a Ziklag or two in our life, maybe more. But we need to encourage ourselves in the Lord. It's no time to take it out on somebody else. You know, who brought that into our life? The Lord did. Sometimes he puts us between a rock and a hard place with no one to look to but himself. And you know what? That's not a bad place to be if you think about it. Now, you may not like the difficulties or the circumstances you're facing, but God puts you there, and he wants you to look to him and encourage yourself in the Lord. Look at David. This is a guy that was anointed to be king of Israel. He was going to sit on the throne ruling and reigning over the nation. He's going to lead tens of thousands of people. And in one day he's going to be spoken of as the greatest king in all of the history of Israel. But now he's alone. Those 600 loyal followers, they're talking about stoning him now. He's not in a great place. You know, back when his father sent him from tending the sheep to bring food to his brothers, when Israel and the Philistines were going to fight, and then David says, you know what? He sees Goliath come out. He challenges the armies of Israel. He says, man, who is this overstuffed, bloated Philistine that comes out here and he's bad-mouthing the armies of God? He says, you know what? Somebody ought to go out there and shut his mouth. What are you guys all doing here? I thought you were supposed to fight. He didn't say all that, but he's thinking it. He says, I'll go out there. I'll take him out. He says, he'll be just like that bear and that lion that took a sheep of mine. He says, I killed them both. He ain't no different. And so after Saul, you know, says, oh, you know what? You know what? You need to use my armor. And David says, you know what? I got a slingshot. You know, and I got a little shepherd's bag. That's all I need. Besides, I haven't proved any of the stuff you're using. And he's lucky. Saul was lucky it wasn't me. I would have said, King, if you think it's such a good idea, why don't you go out there and get him? right? Yeah, but you don't think they're going to work for you, and somehow you think they're going to work for me. But anyways, he kills Goliath. And when he comes off the field of battle, what happens? There's a parade, aren't they? And everybody's singing, David has killed his what? 10,000. And Saul has killed his what? Thousands. Now, everyone seems to know now who David was. Now, how many think people were so impressed with David, they probably wanted to name their children after him? Hey, here's a brave soldier. Here's one who took courage. He's not even old enough to be in the army, but you know what? I think, you know what? I'm going to name my children after that guy. But now, look at him. All by himself. No one there to help him out. No one to lift him up. Did he suffer the same thing everybody else did? But he's all alone. His family's not there. His parents aren't there. His siblings are gone. They're not there to help him out. And now his 600 men who had pledged their lives to him are wanting to take his life. You got to wonder, where was God at that moment? Have you ever faced a Ziklag and thought that? Where are you, Lord? Where is the Lord God of Elijah? I've said that before. Was I mistaken for doing so? Sure. Did he not promise he'd never leave us nor forsake us? But we feel we're abandoned by friends, family, everybody that we know, and we're all alone. And we got to wonder, at times we wonder, where was God at that moment? Well, we need to remind ourselves, his eyes were still fastened on David. And his eyes are still fastened on you. You see, he was nearer to David at that moment than David's hands and feet. He was as close to David as David's breath. What had God done? Why did he allow this to happen? Well, he brought his man to the place where he had no one but God to turn to. David was brokenhearted. Now, if God is going to do something in your life, he's going to work in your life until he gets you to the point when you are alone with him. Jacob. He's about to face his brother Esau. And the last time he heard about Esau, Esau was tracking him down, wanting to kill him. And now he's returning, and he hears Esau's coming, and he's got 400 men with him. And he looks around, and he thinks, man, I got 12 children, a couple wives and a couple substitutes, and my flocks and herds. This ain't going to work against 400 men. And so what does Jacob do? How many think he was feeling a little pressure there, having a bit of stress? But you know what the thing he did? He did something wise. He went and got alone with God that night, and he prayed, and the Lord strengthened him. He told him everything's going to be all right. You know, sometimes God gets us to the place where we're all alone with just you and him. Now, it does not mean that you don't have a wife. You can still have a wife. You can still have children. But you know what? He gets us to the place where we feel all alone. And you know what he wants us? He wants to mean more to you than all others in your life. Listen, is he not supposed to have preeminence? You know, when you read the Bible, you see that we are to love him more than our spouse, children, and all others. Are we not? I wonder how many of us do that. Sometimes he brings in these terrible tragedies to make us appreciate him more and set our affections on him once again. Does he have preeminence in your life? Is he your number one love? And by the way, if he's not, your marriage won't be what it should be, nor will your family be what it should be. You see, it takes three to make a marriage. It's like a triangle, two down here, two people, and God. And they both ought to have their affections on things above. He wants you to mean more to you than anybody else. As a matter of fact, if we're going to go further with God, the task before us requires added faith again and again. God will bring us to the end of ourselves and to the discovery once more that he is our all and all. He is the one that we need. Sometimes we're afraid of the future. So many of us live in fear. But you know what? When your eyes are upon the Lord, you really don't have anything to fear. But we cower about the future. You know, so many people get all shook up about what's happening. You know, not too long ago, somebody was telling me about all this stuff, and I said, you know what? I don't know, understand why all this stuff happens as far as, you know, even science, falsely so-called. They're always trying to get the populace to live in fear. Are they not? They are, you know. Oh, we're going to burn to death. Oh, we're going to freeze to death. Oh, the ozone. I'm so sick and tired of all that stuff. I survived the ice age that was coming when I was 4 years old. I survived being burned up because of climate change. And, you know, I survived the ozone layer thinning. And I survived by still eating potatoes when they weren't supposed to be good for you. And eggs and all this other stuff. I'm still here. But yet so many get caught up with the chicken little syndrome, the sky is falling. Now, you say, what's your cure for that? I just keep my eyes on the Lord. You see, my trust isn't in the White House, it's in the Father's house. And because it's in the Father's house, I realize everything's going to be all right, no matter what comes into my life. I don't have anything to fear. You say, well, that's rather simple. Yeah. Well, I think there's simplicity in Christ, amen? Why is everybody all shook up about everything? Oh, you know what, inflation. Oh, the economic disaster. Oh, the national debt. Really? Does not God promise he'll meet our needs? So why are you so shook up about it? The future is his. History is his. And if you read the book, you'll find out our future's mighty good. But so often, because we cower from what's going to happen in the future, we flinch from doing what we should do because of what it might cost to do it. You know, when I decided to get in, I didn't decide. When God called me to preach, you know what? I had a choice to make. And like some I knew, they decided that they were going to stay in and make the military a career. And then once they got out, then that they were going to get in the ministry. Now, I'm not saying that wasn't God's will for them. It very may well have been. But, you know, I remember, and I'll be honest with you, missionaries have messed my life up. I was saved under the ministry of a missionary. Then I was called to preach under the ministry of a missionary. And then I was led to get out of the military under the preaching of a minister, of a missionary. And I was even led to come here when I didn't want to come here under the preaching of a missionary. So those missionaries have just messed me up totally. But here's the thing. I was sitting in church, and that missionary was preaching. And God was speaking to my heart, you need to get out. You don't need this anymore. And you know what? It was becoming pretty tough in the military for me. Because, you know, of my faith. I was being persecuted for it. I mean, I was called out in front of the fire department, 75 other guys being mocked for what I believed. You say, well, that's not right. Well, it happened. And you know what? You can say what you want, but you know what? When the higher-ups don't do anything about it, what are you supposed to do? And so things were not turning out well for me. I mean, I was... Check this out. NCO the quarter twice in a year. So 6 months out of the year, I was the best thing happening in the squadron. But come APR time, I got the worst APR. Now, you would think somebody would have picked up on that. But that's what was going on. But the Lord led me to get out, and so by that time, I was not really all that. You know, I was still doing the job. I mean, my boss was wanting me to stay in. But here's the thing. I got out. Now, did it cost me? Man, you know what? If I stayed in another 10 and a half years, I'd have had a full retirement. I would have probably been a master sergeant or a senior, maybe even a chief. I missed tech sergeant by 2 points. And then I didn't even take the test the final year when I could have. You say, why? Because I was getting out. There was no need to waste my time. But you know what? I could have a nice retirement from the military. I could have had free medical for the rest of my life. A lot of good things. But you know what? I wasn't worried about what it cost me. I was looking unto Jesus, and this is what he wanted for me. And when I got out, I remember signing the papers there over at in New Jersey. What's that? McCord? Is it? Huh? Oh, well, someplace in New Jersey. But that's where I processed out. And when I processed out, I had a bag of stuff with me. And when I walked out of there, I threw it all in the dumpster. You know what it was? It was my uniforms. You say, why would you do that? Because there was no turning back. I burnt the bridge. Did it cost? Yeah. You know, when I got my first call to pastor a church, I took a 75% pay cut. Because I'm in it for the money. Came here. Now listen, we were living below poverty. Came here, I took 100% pay cut. From living below poverty to absolutely nothing. You say, why would you do that? Because this is where God wanted me to be. You see, could I be fretting? I remember when I was called to preach, Connie looked at me and she said, well, how are we going to make it if we get out of the military? I had no idea. I didn't know what the future held. I just looked at her and I heard it before somewhere. The Lord will provide where the Lord guides. And she had peace about it, but I'm like, I sure hope it works. I didn't see that in the Bible, not quite that way, but it's called faith. And we ought to be doing what God would have us do. We shouldn't be looking at how much it costs us. You know, I never look back and say, oh, what a sacrifice I've made. I don't think of it as a sacrifice. I think of it as a privilege. I got to live for the Lord, and I get to preach His word, and I get to pastor a church. It's a wonderful thing. You know, I never thought, man, you know what? If I'm going to do this, we're going to starve to death and we're going to die. But yet, you know what? Some people won't tithe and they have that same mindset. If I give 10% of my income, I'm going to starve to death. Really? Wow. Yeah, you'll be the first one. You know, I think you read the story of the widow's mites when she cast in all she had, that she walked away, went into the wilderness, and died of starvation. And that was the end of her. How many think that's what happened to her? Didn't happen. I think God took care of her. And sometimes you go through these Ziklag experiences, you're wondering, how are you going to make it through? It's tough. Has anybody ever been through a really dark time? Man, it's hurtful, isn't it? It is. But you know what? God's got a plan for that. He wants you to rely on Him, keep your eyes on Him. You know, basically He's letting David know, you're not fit to be my king until you learn some lessons over there at Ziklag. If you think, I am going through it, it's not you that are going through it. God is taking you through it. He has something special for you. He's building you into the believer He wants you to be. So be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Keep your eyes on Him. Do not die at your Ziklag. Do not quit at your Ziklag. Do not throw in the towel because of a dark time that comes into your life. You know, you're not going to go from Bethlehem to Jerusalem until you go through a Ziklag. You got to have a Ziklag. And what are you going to learn? Well, you ought to learn that God is able, that God is what you need. Maybe you just met the Lord. Someone told you about Him. You got saved. And you know what? You haven't been through a Ziklag yet. But the day is coming. And you're going to need what is being said this morning. Now, you need to know something about the depth of His love. And you're not going to find it without your Ziklag. You think about it. Everybody's turning against David. He's got one person, and it's God in heaven that he can turn to. Now, did God turn on him? Did God's love stop being shown to David because he's in the depths of despair? So David knew the reality of God's love, even in his worst of conditions. You ever read David saying, God, you don't love me or you wouldn't put me through this? No, he didn't act like a spoiled brat. And by the way, neither did Job. How many think Job went through a Ziklag? Sure he did. But when it's all said and done, I think they knew the depth of God's love for them. You know, I believe they knew that God is long-suffering. They found that out, that He is patient. And that, you know what? He never did leave them. And that's a wonderful thing. Job said, you know what? I don't see him on the left, don't see him on the right, don't see him ahead, don't see him behind, but you know what? He's there. I don't feel his presence like I used to, but he's still there. He's overseeing this all, and because he is, I'm not going to question him. We need to know something about how sweet and precious he is during those dark times. We need to find that he is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. We need to know something about his comforting presence, because it will happen. It's coming. We need to know in the depth of our soul that he will not abandon us. We need to understand again that he is our present help in time of trouble. You know, there's a time in my life I remember what happened. And I thought to myself, I don't ever want to have to go through that hell again. And that's really what it was. Not quite as bad, but it was bad. But you know, during that time, I knew God was with me. During that time, I still read my Bible every day. I still prayed every day, went to church faithfully, still gave, still went soul winning. I did all those things. Was it hard? It was hard. It was difficult. My heart was breaking all the time. You say, did you get angry? Yeah, I got angry. Perhaps I didn't handle it the best as I should. But at least I stayed faithful and I realized he's a friend who still loves me no matter what I'm going through. You know, sometimes that's all you have. All you have is the Lord. And then you find that's all you need. You know, at Ziklag, you learn to die to yourself. You learn to die to self. You know, that's difficult. But it's something we need to reckon. We need to reckon to be dead. You know, as we think about the crucified life and dying to self, perhaps it's easier to understand what it should demonstrate in our lives. You know what it means? It means death to your ideas, death to your dreams, death to your plans, your schemes. It's all over. Most of us have the idea that when God got us, he got a bargain. Right? We think, man, when God got me, he sure got a blessing. You know, sure, I mean, he went to the thrift store and picked out a piece of junk that everybody else thought was junk. But then he took it to the Antique Roadshow. Folks, we just need to remember we're nothing but dirt balls. We came from dust. God formed man out of the dust of the ground. And these bodies will go back to that dust. You know, David had said a little earlier in his story, I'm never going to be king. We saw that earlier in his life. When he said that, he expressed his self-will. He seems to have gotten his eyes off the Lord, doesn't he? He should have claimed God's promises, and God's promises would have saw him through. But David here is learning to die to self. David is learning to get his priorities right here at Ziklag. And at Ziklag, God refines us, oftentimes through the fire of loneliness. And then at Ziklag, we see divine direction. Notice what it says in verse 7 of 1 Samuel chapter 30. And David said to Abiathar the priest, Ahimelech's son, I pray thee, bring me hither the ephod. Abiathar brought thither David, or brought thither the ephod to David. And David inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I pursue after this troop? Shall I overtake them?" And he answered, "Pursue, for thou shalt surely overtake them, and without fail recover all." David said, "You know what? At my Ziklag, I need to find out what God wants me to do." Now, you would think maybe a guy like David would have just bypassed the Lord altogether and say, "Hey, guys, stop talking about stoning me. You know, let's rise up. Let's go after the enemy. Let's get back what's ours." But at Ziklag, he learned it's God's will that mattered. He needed to find out what the Lord wanted him to do and then move forward. You know, I've often said, when you're in the valley, when you're in that dark place, that's the worst time to make a decision. And it is, because most of us make decisions all on our own. We do not consult the Lord. And if we would just consult the Lord, things would turn out different. David waited on the Lord, and the Lord said, "Pursue." And you know what? They got everything back. What a wonderful thing. But we need to remember that the road to our Jerusalem often goes through Ziklag. And you know what? No one else is there to encourage us, but we must encourage ourselves in the Lord. All right, we'll have some more in just a few minutes.